genre.
Welcome to the New Republic Archives, where we discuss the history and legends of a galaxy far, far away. I'm Tim Garcia.
And I'm Gary Roby.
And we have a guest today. We have Norman, returning favorite to the podcast. Thanks for joining us, Norman.
Well, thanks for having me. Always great to be here.
Yeah, we said we would do this when we finished the last time you were here. And I'm glad we're back with like a new season.
Yeah, I can't wait for them to do even more of this stuff.
I know. It's so good. We should tell the folks what we're doing today.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Star Wars today.
Oh, hell yeah. What?
Wow.
Yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah. No, Norman was on for our season one Visions episode, where we did three episodes of season one. And we're back with season two. Season two was released earlier this year. And so we're doing three episodes that one of us picked. Each of us picked one. Guys, I really liked all of these episodes.
Me too. It was really hard to pick like which one I wanted to bring to like do a little more deep dive on, because we don't have time to go through all nine of them.
Right. Right. We could. It just be like multiple episodes of doing this.
That's God. It would be so many hours of content.
Oh yeah.
Right.
This is just, sorry, we're just going to do this for the next 4 months.
Content. Content.
Yeah, I think with the first season, I felt there were a lot more like hit or miss. Like the quality was very much like what's the word I'm looking for? There were like really, really good ones, and then ones that I'm like, ah, okay, this is kind of whatever. I think of the Tatooine. What are the kids singing on Tatooine one?
Oh, I like that one.
That's the one that I was like kind of uninterested in. I'm just kinda, yeah. Like, ah,
there were a couple that I was like, okay, that's like kind of whatever. But like, I feel like most of these are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Right. So why don't we go around and tell everyone which ones we picked and why'd you pick this one, Norman? Sure. You can start. You're the guest.
Sure. So the one that I picked was The Spy Dancer. And I kind of would be lying if I said that this was like a hard choice for me, because The Spy Dancer just like does so many things that I just enjoy in media. Like,
yeah.
It's got this like 1940s like noir vibe to it. It's got like Casablanca vibes and stuff to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, mm-hmm. It's just doing cool stuff with the animation. I like the kind of like sketchy lines. And the more fluid colors, I just think it mm-hmm. looks really interesting, especially like some of the dance sequences. The way that they animate the clock
amazing.
Is just
oh yeah,
so good. I like kind of this like story of like the family separation and kind of this fraught, down to earth part of the rebellion. And I still haven't watched Andor, but I love stuff like that. So I know when I do watch Andor, I'll like it.
Andor.
I just haven't had the time or the motivation to like watch a lot of the extra Star Wars stuff, except for Ahsoka, because I'll always make time for Ahsoka Tano.
Well, I'll just say with Andor, not to get too far off immediately off topic, but it is a emotional investment, I feel like, in that show.
Yeah.
It's a heavy show, more so than I think any of the other Star Wars things are.
I would agree with that.
I also really like the kind of melancholy interplay that virtually all the stories in Visions Part 2 had. Like, there's a real, like, element of kind of existential melancholy behind all of these.
Yeah.
Compared to the first one, where there's, like, a mix of, like, light and optimistic, and then, like, we have, like, a couple of darker ones. The exception in this set of Visions is I Am Your Mother, which I think is actually my least favorite of these, but I do enjoy all of them.
I get that. I almost, for the record, I almost picked I Am Your Mother. That one was tailor-made for me, I think. Yeah. I grew up on Wallace and Gromit and Creature Comforts, and even collecting all the Chevron cars that they had, which was also, all of that was Aardman Animation. So it's like...
I mean, I can't pretend that, like, the Aardman animation isn't charming as hell.
And then on top of that, it was an episode about racing, which listeners will know I'm a massive racing fan. Plus, I had Wedge Antilles. So, you know, it really just was, they did everything.
Ticks all the boxes.
Everything for me, and I didn't even pick it. So,
I do think the Wedge thing's really funny.
It's hilarious. It's very funny. I love that.
It's so good. Tim, since you didn't pick I Am Your Mother, which one did you
pick? I picked Screecher's Reach. And I picked this one because it's an awesome kind of spooky kind of twist.
The twist is so good.
Yeah. So we'll get more into it, but it's obviously inspired by like the Irish Banshees and Irish folklore and stuff like that. And I just thought it was awesome. So we'll get more into that when we go into it. But very cool episode.
You and I traded back and forth like multiple times on which episode we were going to pick, because I almost picked that one. And instead, I ended up picking Sith, which is the first of the season. And it has this just gorgeous painterly style to it. Like,
it's got
I
a lot in common
much...
with Spider-Verse visually.
Yeah, I definitely see that. It leans really heavily into the visual style of the kind of paintwork that the character does. And it treats like the aspects of the Force, like the light and the dark, almost as like her emotional state in like a really vulnerable way, like in a way that we don't really see a lot of the time. Like, it's funny to look at the dark side and be like, oh, those guys are just emo. But like, if you dig a little deeper, it is about like that negative emotional mindset. And like, it comes off as anger so much. But there's depth there.
The dark side is really kind of, in a lot of ways, is about this kind of like need to be an individual. There's like so much of the dark side is about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we'll get more into the light and dark stuff, because I think that's the meat of that episode, right?
Yeah. And I think that's why I ended up choosing that one in the end, is like, I really love the way that that it's portrayed. And like the thing that this character is going through.
Yeah. I like when we get metaphysical.
Right. And you and I can always get massive tangents on like how the Force, what the Force means, how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, Norman, let's start with Spy Dance here. I also really loved this episode or this. Yeah, I guess episode, this short film, however you want to, call it. Like you said, it's kind of noir, kind of, it's about basically a kind of a Moulin Rouge type theater in the galaxy that the Empire visits.
Yeah.
Which I think is, first of all, a kind of a cool concept, but also very funny that all the stormtroopers show up in their uniforms.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was wild to see stormtroopers take their helmets off.
I mean, do stormtroopers even have faces. Other clothes? Like,
I don't know.
It's never really been explored, which is funny to me. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess the black.
Oh, go ahead.
I would say like the black, like Under Armour or whatever they have underneath is kind of the closest that they have. But
yeah, it's like a little jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, like, with the stormtroopers take their helmet off, like, we don't see that a whole lot. And one of the cool things about it in this like short is seeing how diverse the like modern troopers are compared to like the clone troopers, which like I think is kind of doing like three different things kind of in the episode, like in the short, which is like it's just putting like more diversity on the screen at like a surface level. It's showing that the stormtroopers are not all the same as like separating it from the clone
troopers.
They're
not clones,
Then it also ties into like the main character of this is Kid being taken by the Empire to show all these disparate people that are part of the stormtroopers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting, which we'll get to as well. We don't see a lot of non-human Imperial officers, and I think that's one of the things that they always kind of pointed out to set Admiral
Thrawn. I thought it was such an interesting way they hide it until like the last possible moment in the episode.
Yeah.
Of like who this person is. Although I will say, like, I think I figured it out the moment that the character did, which is really fascinating.
I think you're supposed to. I think it's it's like the same color eye and the eye patch. It's just like, oh, of course.
Yes, yes. His helmet pulled particularly low. Like, it's such a good reveal. I had a moment in this episode. I love the dancing. I think that the animation of like all of her dance sequences are gorgeous, and her fight sequences incredible.
So her is Loey. Right,
yeah,
that's
Loey.
This is Loey's establishment.
Yeah, she's a dancer and owner of the establishment.
It's called Follies, I think.
No, I think it's Foies. It's
Foies. Oh,
it's a French word.
So yeah, so I did want to mention. So and then we have Hetis, who's the waitress girl.
Yeah.
And I did want to mention that they all have Ryloth accents.
That's interesting.
Because everyone on Ryloth has a French accent, so I just assume that if you have a French accent, it's a Ryloth accent.
That's fair.
No, it's Loey's Follies. It is
Follies. Yeah.
It's L. Yeah.
It's just the way that they kind of say it in the episode makes it sound like it's a French word.
That's fascinating.
There's
the moment when she first like steps out and like descends to the stage, and her dress and the ribbons come flowing and billowing out in this really beautiful way. Did any of you guys see Nope?
Yes.
That's the first thing I thought.
Seen Nope.
Spoilers.
That's fine.
For Nope. But when you finally see what the UFO thing is, when it like unveils itself for the first time fully, it's this really big, beautiful, white, flowy, eldritch sort of thing.
Mm.
And that's exactly, it's a very similar image to like what her dress looks like billowing around her and the way it's like moving and curving. It's gorgeous though. Oh my gosh.
It really is. And I really like the little conversation in her dressing room beforehand with Hetis, and then with John over the comm about like what they're doing, because they're spying for the rebellion. They're getting information from Imperial officers and run-of-the-mill stormtroopers that show up here. They're putting tracking devices on them during her performance, and everyone's distracted. It's a really setup.
It is a cool setup. It is funny to me what are they doing tracking stormtroopers? Like, thinking about it, it's like, okay, the stormtroopers, they're just going back to the giant ships in the sky. They're not like hiding.
No, but they'll be deployed, and they can see the trajectory of their deployment. Maybe they
Okay, I can see that.
You track like guard patterns and shit. Maybe.
Also. Yeah. Do you think they don't take off their armor? Because I feel like as soon as they take off their armor, they would see a tracker on them.
I mean, it does like cloak itself into the color of the armor. That's like a little touch you see in the animation for all of them. But like, I don't know, because if it could also be recording audio and transmitting audio, we don't know.
That's also
true. It could.
So you're just listening in on whatever the stormtroopers are listening to, because the radios are like part of their armor, their outfits.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I always think about like what's going on, what's actually going on here. But
makes
it's
me
not
wonder how long
story.
They've been doing this for, or how long they've been at this for, because she's very, very good at what she does.
Well, she owns the freaking cabaret. She could just set that up.
That's true.
You know, like that had to be built.
Right. She had to establish very much first, like, and like get the Imperials interested in coming and like all this other stuff.
Yeah,
she would have had to have been vetted probably for years before any Imperial officers ever showed up.
Right. And so the other thing is that it's supposed to have happened 20 years ago. Her kid was taken, we find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which must put this about the time of Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi.
That sounds right.
Because
stormtroopers.
Well, because Luke is born at like zero.
Yeah.
At like -19 or 19 BBY, which puts us like 1 year post Battle of Yavin or so.
Mm.
I was like, if they give us a date, I'm like, okay, let's think. Where does this take place?
I mean, it could take place before the Battle of Yavin still, potentially, because like there were stormtroopers, there were battles prior to Luke's like, well, not really, I guess you're right, because 19 years BBY is like Luke is born, he's hidden.
Right, so it'd be a clone trooper that would have taken...
Yeah, he's taken by an Imperial officer.
You're right, he's taken by an Imperial officer. So, yeah, this would have to be, like, a few years after the Battle of... a few years BBY.
Yeah, so yeah, probably maybe even closer to Jedi.
Yeah, this has to be, like, a few years ABY. It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating. When does Return take place? What year?
I believe it's officially four...
I think it's 4 BBY.
Four ABY.
So this would almost to be around that time.
Right.
But like Visions is kind of considered an alternate history, its own canon, totally different stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. But like I always still like to think.
It's still fun. Okay, trying to fit stuff in. Doing the math is fun.
It's not important. Like these are all things that I think about that aren't important to the story, but are just this is a fun thought exercise.
Right. Like Luke's age just like leaves not a lot of room for like stuff like this in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to think about. Because they left a lot more room between the original trilogy and the sequels to like be able to backfill stuff like this.
I think they get like an extra 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because like with the other ones, you know, just doing stories with Jedi and Sith is much easier to just play around with the timeline. It doesn't matter. Like, there was just always...
thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, this is a very specific... When you start like including galactic politics, everything starts getting have to be very precise.
Because one of the things that's not clear really from Return of the Jedi too is just without any other context, like how long it takes them to deal with whatever's left of the Empire after they blow up the second Death Star.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's been fleshed out in books and stuff, and the Battle of Jakku and all this nonsense that
And all the live actions are kind of filling in that space for the most part, too.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely.
But back to what's actually happening here. I really like the setup of this, like, spy, like, this woman that owns this place. Her relationship with Atiss is kind of interesting. It feels like a surrogate daughter relationship, though it's unclear exactly, like, what their relationship is. The way Atiss talks to her about, like, not being a child anymore very much sounds like a daughter. We don't know, like, if she... Maybe she is, but that's just never, like, established here.
I love that everyone, her whole crew, they're all the same species that she is.
Right. They're clearly, like, the indigenous species of this planet. Whatever it is.
Yeah, and they're really reinforcing the, like, the physical traits that they share. Like, the different colored eyes, the heterochromia, the little horn nubbins on the forehead.
I like that they kind of look like devils, and Hatice calls the Imperials imps. I think that's like an interesting little interplay. And then we see an Imperial later that is one of them. Because, surprise, surprise, her stolen kid grew up and became a loyalist to the Empire.
Yeah, so we get this really great moment, right? Because there's the flashback of like what happened and the loss of her kid. And they really linger on the officer and the fact that he walks with a cane and he's got this.
Yeah. And his outline, his silhouette is very, very distinct. And then we see this HK unit and this guy with a cane and he's got the same silhouette and like the same face. And then
we make the same connection she does, right? Like, oh, this is the guy. And she fumbles. And that moment when she starts to plummet, and Hatice like jumps out to stop her, like you really get this, like, they also have this master apprentice almost kind of relationship. Like she jumps in and is like, I was ready for this.
Very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And I like, speaking of that real quick, like one of the things I really like about some of these Visions episodes between first and second season is the way that they will use a piece of dialogue from the original trilogy and twist it.
Yeah.
I think that's just like a really interesting thing that they've kind of all have done in some way. And in this one, They use the line, like my father before me, and like a twist, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The once Atiss like saves her, everyone's like, oh, it's just part of the show, and they all clap, and then she like freaks out and she's just like, everyone needs to leave.
You need to get the fuck out of here.
Because I'm gonna assassinate this son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Right.
John, you need to go because I'm about to make a big mistake.
Yeah.
I love everyone leaves except for the musician who just continues playing.
Playing his like Star Wars, his Star Wars like.
He says, Theremin. It's like a Theremin.
He does. He says, I have a bad feeling about this. Yeah.
I love his instrument. It's so cool.
It is. It's like Star Wars Theremin. It's interesting.
Yeah.
He's playing it with his hands in the air. It's a weird little frog dude.
I love this guy.
I'm always down for.
Give me more weird
universe Star Wars music.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, the music. I also really. The music in this episode's really great. I think my favorite piece of animation is when she comes back down after getting everybody to leave and her dress is like the orange and it looks like fire.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's definitely like some Phoenix imagery in that.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It's like, I've been waiting 20 years for this.
Yeah.
She gets there and she has it like pointed at his neck and realizes it's not the guy.
Yeah.
And then she hesitates a moment and asks, like, who are you? And it's that moment. Like, she has the realization and you, the audience, have the realization, like, oh.
It's him.
This is the kid.
Yeah. Because he has the eye and, like, the skin tone.
Yep. He's covering the one so people won't know.
Yeah. Right?
That's my read.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And he's covering his horn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So their species on Wikipedia they list them as near human, but I'm pretty sure Zabrak
like are also listed Maul as species. Near human.
Yeah,
what's up?
Zabrak are also listed as near human, aren't they?
Yeah, but I'm thinking specifically they are Zabrak.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
because they look kind of like that.
They're like an offshoot of the Zabrak. They look like
yeah.
They don't have as many of the little horn nubbins, but
I mean, they could be a hybrid species, like near human. They could have been.
The heterochromia in every one of them is an interesting distinguishing trait from Zabrak.
So. Yeah, yeah.
But like, it's not just like the little horns either. It's like the thin kind of frame and like the high cheekbones and everything. It's also kind of like Zabrakish, like the way that Zabraks have been depicted, at least in the animation.
Yeah. So yeah, they that's what I was getting. I just thought that's who they were.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So she attempts to assassinate the guy and is like, wait, it's not you. Yeah.
With like Assassin's Creed style gauntlets.
Yeah,
that are so also sick. Like connected to her dress. Like I really like the way that's all done too.
Yeah. It starts a big chase scene / fight scene. Which is extremely well done. Honestly, this, like, the little story is very unique and cool, but this is one that's just, you have to watch it, because
all the action sequences are so
visually good. Everything, all the movement, everything is just the best part of this episode.
Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous.
More than anything else that happens in it. It's just looking at it is the best part.
Yeah, it's so fluid. Like, got this, like, sketchy quality to it, but, like, the movement itself is also clean. It's just, like, a really fun interplay between the style and then, like, everything in motion just looks so good. Everything, like, flows like water. The cloth looks excellent. The way that Hatice, like, comes back and, like, her little run around the catwalk up top and, like, dropping down and wrapping herself up to steady the gun, like, all that looks so sick.
Her fight with the droid is awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's so sweet.
The way she wraps him up to tear him in half at the end is so satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's excellent. And then it still moves, because those droids are just, like, so hard to take
scary.
Out.
Scary. That moment when he starts crawling at her again.
And then John shows up with the electric saw to take its head off.
It's so good.
Which is always funny to me, because, like,
I'm good with machines.
Yeah, he is good with the machine, but the droid consciousness question.
Oh yeah,
they're not sentient, but the droid factory scene in Attack of the Clones really brings this.
Yes.
Like, where is the droid's consciousness, and is it in its whole body, or is it
the fact that both the battle droid head on C-3PO and 3PO on the battle droid, like, their dialogue gets interplayed?
Yeah, also? they get all crossed up.
Like, Star Wars doesn't want you to think too hard about, like, the droid consciousness question.
Oh, no.
It plays it so fast and loose. my opinion on, like, the sentience and, like, the life of droids in current Star Wars, without Legends existing as part of it anymore, is if we get a Force-sensitive droid in the new canon somewhere, I think there's a lot more weight to, like, the droid sentience question again. Because we've had a Force-sensitive droid in the past, but I don't know if he's canon anymore.
Which one?
I don't think...
The droid that Luke almost picks on Tatooine.
Oh, yeah, old... wait.
R4?
I don't... yes, R5-D4.
I don't remember if this is still canon or not. He's from a comic. It's from
a
comic.
I do not believe so. R5-D4 is in Mandalorian, so...
He has a Force ghost. In a comic book.
Wow.
Did you look it up? Did you find it?
No. I did not that bit. But I do know there is, in the first certain point of view, we didn't talk about it. One of the stories is about R5-D4 recognizing that, like, R2 is more important than he is to this story. And I don't remember if that has to do with the Force or not.
Yes, he basically, he explodes himself, basically.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there was a comic where that's explained as the Force, and we see, like, a R5-D4 Force ghost. Maybe I'm imagining that. Maybe it was a meme, but I swear I saw that.
No, I'm looking at it.
Amazing. I love this.
You find it?
I don't know if this is a canon comic even back then, though.
Probably not.
Oh, it's a Bandai comic.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Oh, interesting. Yep, I found it.
Well, yep. And then that game Star Wars Hunters never came out, but the droid in that one, J3-D1, was programmed to believe he had the Force, which is very different from having the Force.
So, hang on. I know we are way off topic, but I just want to read the last thing in this Bandai comic, because it sounds like it could be read by Rod Serling in The Twilight Zone.
Oh, good. Please, give me your Rod Serling.
Be kind to your droids and major appliances, and next time you're alone and you feel something, a faint beeping in your skull, or the sound of motors whirring, you may be sensing him. One with the Force now, ever present, ever seeking out others of his kind. Others who may be in your kitchen, or in your desk, or in your briefcase. Wherever machines are taken for granted, wherever sentience may exist, there will be Skippy, the Jedi droid.
They
don't call him R5-D4, but he's Skippy the Jedi droid.
I don't care. This is so good. Thank you for that performance, Tim.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's rules.
So funny.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, I think droids are people when they're treated as people by other characters, and the rest of the time, fuck it, they're just robots. It's like, it's so weird.
Yeah, like, it's programming. It's just programming.
Yeah, I don't think I believe that.
Gary's one of those people that thinks that...
I think droids are people.
It's like Brendan.
AI is someone trapped in the computer.
No, Gary...
I don't know about that.
You played Cyberpunk 2077, right, Gary?
I've played a lot of Cyberpunk. I did not finish that game.
It's like Brendan, the vending machine.
Yes, yes, 100%. Yes.
Brendan, he's programming. He's not sentient.
If you haven't, you should play Citizen Sleeper.
Yeah.
That game is all about consciousness and sentience in animatronic beings and shit like that.
I kind of wish there was more of that in Cyberpunk.
As long as Gary, we can set a boundary that ChatGPT is not a real person.
No. Okay. ChatGPT is not a person. No, I think Star Wars droids are people when the plot decides to treat them as people. I don't know that that's blanket works for every droid.
I know that there is, like, a long-standing, like, theory among some folks that C-3PO is specifically sentient because Anakin awakened him to sentience with the Force when he built him.
Interesting.
That makes no sense.
It's wild. I don't... That's...
Like, insane. Something about Anakin being the chosen one granted, like, C-3PO sentience when he built him.
Clone Wars kind of... Like, R2 is more of a person than a battle droid because R2's never had his memory wiped.
Right.
And so, like, there's a thing about lived experience that shapes the program. I guess. I don't know. They're not clear about it.
Yeah.
I want to believe they're people.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about Toby last time. We should move on.
Yeah.
That's true. The closest we've gotten to the Force using the Force droid is Triple Zero in the Vader comics. Oh. Really wants to suck all the blood out of people to see if he can start using the Force. Like, just that's drain them. Amazing. I mean, he's the evil 3PO, and he's fantastic. That's but
I need your midichlorians. Give me your blood.
Literally, yeah. That's his plan.
Good for awesome. Him. I hope it works.
By that logic, Grievous should be able to use the Force.
Yeah, no, agreed. But he's just, I mean, it's just it's more of a hypothesis that he's actually willing to drain people of blood for.
Grievous was organic.
Yeah,
right? Grievous is a cyborg.
Grievous is a nervous system inside of a robot suit. He has more reason
to be able to use the Force than like a standard droid does.
But Vader, okay, we're still way off topic. But Vader is less capable of using the Force after all of his cybernetic replacements, right?
I don't think so.
That is not confirmed.
And the thing is,
maybe that's also part of Vader, like older canon stuff that like had been talked about.
It's the Vader, the Lords of the Sith book by, I want to say it's James Luceno.
That sounds right.
It talks about, there's a moment where it's talking about like Anakin in the Bacta, like limbs gone, like feeling the absence of them and how that fuels his rage and makes him more powerful in the dark side. So it's not just about like midichlorian count, like he is drawing on his anger to keep him going.
Right.
In the same way that it turned out that Maul did. I don't know. Star Wars is weird.
Lords of the Sith is 2/3 of a great book.
I agree 100% with that statement. We should talk about that at some point.
Yeah. But anyway.
But yeah.
Yeah, so let's continue with we're on the fight she meets her she reveals that he's her son, basically.
Yeah.
There's that great bit on the rooftop where she like calls him out. Just like, "I know it's you." And he doesn't believe.
He's like, "I'm bringing order to the galaxy. I'm bringing peace. I'm a great man like my father before me."
Yeah.
Don't you fucking call that man your father.
Yeah. Right? That's such a good moment, though. I love the way that like can twist the knife into a version, into the viewers that's seen Star Wars before. Like the way that outside of this context, it has like more weight to it. And I always think that's interesting when it's done in like an artful way. It doesn't feel like it's clubbing you over the head with it. Like it,
yeah.
Like the thing about like my father before me as a line is that it feels like something someone could say in like a moment like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Luke says it. He's like, "I'm a Jedi like my father before me." Right.
Right. Sometimes feels like something someone could just say. Like it doesn't feel, especially in the context in which it's said, which is also true here.
And this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this whole scene is just reverse Empire, right? Luke, "I'm your father." It's, you know, "No, I'm your mother.
I'm your mother."
And, you know, and it's pulling a, you know, it's pulling a Imperial away from, you know, towards the rebel side.
Oh, it's so good.
And then you have the scene at the end where they're communicating just like Luke and Vader did after that scene where one of them's on a Star Destroyer and one of them's on another ship flying away, but they know they're connected now. Like, it's just a complete awesome mirror perfect. Parallel it's at so the good. End. It's just like,
the moment she disarms him and he comes for her and she just embraces him and he tries to pull away, but like
some part of him can't, do it.
Yeah. Cause he knows, he knows what he's hiding with his hat and his eye patch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The drama. So good.
The drama.
Yeah. Extremely good. So, it ends with her basically showing that, like, "Look, I gave him my communicator and a tracking badge.
There's a tracking on it.
Uh-huh. And I hope it works out. I got faith."
Yep. "We can connect sometime if that happens." And then that's just where it leaves. And that's just a perfect place to just stop it. Because it's just...
I thought it was really interesting, and this is just like such a tiny note, but he takes his hat off, and it's not just that he's hiding the little horns. They've been removed. There's just the scars.
Yeah, they're just like little nubs and scars,
And you get this like really crestfallen, you see his reflection in the window of the command bay.
Yeah.
And
he regrets what he's done to himself now that he knows his mother is alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so that's Spy Dancer, written and directed by Julian Chang, who looks like he's the head of Studio La Cachette, which did some Primal and did two episodes of Love, Death, and Robots, which Visions just feels like Star Wars, Love, Death, and Robots, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so he's, it just was very good. And then, yeah, I mean, I love Love, Death, and Robots. And I really need to watch Primal. It's been on my to-watch list for forever.
I also really want to watch Primal.
Me too. I mean, I still haven't watched the last season of Samurai Jack, but, you know,
yeah.
Primal's been on my list too.
Yeah. I looked up some of the cast. Louise, played by Camille Cotton, who I did not recognize, but she's been in some things, especially recently, such as House of Gucci. She was in just a couple things that I'd heard of before, but I'd not seen. A Haunting in Venice, she was also in.
I think the thing interesting about, like, because this season's of Visions, like, last season was all Japanese studios, but this season they're, like, global.
Yeah.
And so you get these really interesting, incredible showcase of, like, not only, like, production style, but also just, like actors and voice actors and, like, the work and performances that you get from people who you might not see and stuff that you would recognize. I had mentioned it before we started recording, but there are a couple of these episodes that made me want to go and look up other work that these studios have done because, they're just so compelling. And it's like, oh, I never would have heard of this if it weren't for this showcase on Vision.
Right. Like this season was way more varied in like the mediums used. It's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cause the first one is all anime studios. So like it was all animation. So they, a lot of it had kind of like tributes to specific kinds of anime. Like, Toby was very much in Osamu Tezuka tribute. It was Astro Boy.
Yeah.
Whereas like the Twins was very Gurren Lagann because it was also, because it was Studio Trigger.
God, I just watched Promare. I
need to watch that. That looks so sweet.
It's just them on all levels, firing on all levels.
Just doing like, trigger shit.
They're good trigger shit. Yeah. The plot is fine, but it's gorgeous. Right. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, conclusions tend to get away from Studio Trigger pretty hard.
Yeah, but that's not what's important. Sometimes you just want to pull back the camera and reveal that your Star Destroyer is two Star Destroyers stuck together in the middle.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Gurren Lagann probably
symbolism,
has
Gary.
Yeah. I mean, Gurren Lagann probably has the most consistent ending with the rest of its story out of all the other Trigger shows.
I should watch more of that. I've only seen a couple episodes.
Well, I guess Gurren Lagann is technically like the last Gainax show, and then Studio Trigger was kind of born from that.
That makes sense.
So
good.
So,
not to get too weedy.
You got anything else to say about Spy Dancer?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this was just beautiful. This has like all the vibes I like. I mean,
It's super pretty. Highly recommend. I mean, I recommend all of these. These are all great.
Yeah. Definitely watch Visions if you haven't.
Absolutely.
So let's move on to Screecher's Reach.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, Spooky Time,
which I definitely, as I mentioned earlier, it's inspired by some Irish folklore with specifically the Banshee. And also, we mentioned paralleling Star Wars scenes. This one was definitely purposefully paralleling the cave on Dagobah. Mm-hmm. It was kind of inspired by that. And I read some interesting things from Paul Young, who is the writer-director, who talked about it. But we'll get into the actual plot of it.
Yeah.
It follows a character named Doll. She's a girl. It looks like they're on like a work camp, right? They all like work in like a mine or something.
Yeah. I really like the,
like in a mining camp.
Yeah. I really like the opening montage leading into like the introduction of Doll, like all the layered animation, and it pulls away almost like a storybook. And then like we get the reveal of her running out in her like work uniform, and we see the burn on her face through her mask and stuff. I like the way they kind of show that like all these kids have worked hard without having to be like super explicit about their conditions by just like showing minor blemishes or scars or work.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a good job of it. I mean, that all took like what, like maybe 30 seconds of screen time. They're just like, yep, look, it's hard here. It sucks. Yeah. They want to get out.
Yeah.
That's all you really need to focus on for this. So basically she runs and she's like, I'm getting out. And she's got this like medallion in her hand. And all her, like three of her friends follow up. A character named Bathon, a character named Quinn, and a character named Kina. Mm-hmm. And they're all three great. I mean, all four of them are great, but they really feel like kids, like, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. I mean,
I think they are kid voice actors, but they, the way they're talking, the way they play, like, all of it feels like, yeah, this is accurate, I guess.
The one kid feels a little older, but just because he's, like, really tall, he's, like, broad, like, he looks...
He's got a little bit of a deeper voice.
Yeah, his voice sounds more mature and put together than the other three voice actors, too. Yeah.
But they still do have this really childlike, like... This is a kid's labor camp.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This planet is gorgeous also as they like travel out. Yeah.
So Dahl makes, she said, I'm getting out of here. So they're like, okay, I guess we're coming with you. She said she's going to Screecher's Reach, which they're like, there's a ghost there. And she's like, mm-hmm. yeah, well, I got to go.
So mention that it's 3 days away.
Yeah.
Three days walk.
Oh, to walk. You're right. They do take the speeders.
So, yeah, they steal some speeders. And it still takes a while. Like, they go camp and they talk about, you know.
There's those, like, walkers out in the little area they speed by. Oh, they're so cool. Whenever I see an image like that, the first thing I think of is, like, Jim Henson. Like, the people up on stilts in, is it The Labyrinth?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember.
Or is it Dark Crystal?
That was Labyrinth or Dark Crystal, but.
But it's like this image of like the people way up on stilts, like in a swamp, is like the thing I always think of when I see imagery like that.
It reminds me also.
There's a scene like that in Mad Max too, kind of, right? Whereas there's like the swamp and then the stuff way up high.
Sorry, I'm like typing like a madman over here.
That's okay.
It reminds me a little bit of the work of Simon Stålenhag. If you guys have seen like The Electric State or Tales from the Loop, he's like a.
I've seen art from the Tales from the Loop RPG. I think I know what you're talking about.
There are a lot of all of his books are they look like photographs, but they're from like a post-disaster like I don't think there are a lot of like they're not mechs in the traditional like you get in a robot to fight like but just big robotics and like broken down kind of weathered on their last leg sort of aesthetic. And it reminds me a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. Or like the vibe of like, have you seen the art for the board game Scythe?
Yeah.
Like some of that kind of like, it's in decline. It's like this kind of like, I think it's called Diesel Punk is like that style of mech.
That makes sense. That sounds about right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, so they go off and they make it to the mountain, Screecher's Reach. It's definitely spooky.
It's so spooky.
It's like a super dark, it is a cave. And I like the line where they're moving into it and they say some dangers are meant to test us.
Yeah.
And part of me was like, oh, that's really neat and a cool thing to think about. But then I'm like, is that a good thing to tell kids? I don't know.
You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
You live or you die, right?
Dangers are also dangerous because you shouldn't be near them.
Takes some wisdom to know what dangers are tests and what dangers are dangers. Which,
you know, kids famously have lots of wisdom.
Oh, so much.
That's part of the test.
It's really smart of them to go down into this cave, It's exactly what they should be doing right now.
The line work in this and the use of shadows is so cool. I love all this.
It's very awesome. Yeah. As they move through the cave and then the first time they see they're talking about this ghost. They do a good job of like hyping up the ghost before.
Yeah.
They're like, some say she's just in her mind, like she's not even a real ghost. She just appears to you.
I don't want to see a ghost.
Yeah. I ain't afraid of no ghost. So, So they do a good job of hyping it up and you're like, okay, well, whatever. And, there's definitely a very great, like, doll like turns around and is talking to him and definitely has a like, it's right behind me, isn't it, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it appears right behind her. And this thing's horrifying.
Like, I'm so like, scary.
If I was a kid watching this, this would like absolutely terrify me.
Oh, it's yeah. so scary.
Yeah. Be like, absolutely not. No, thank you.
Yeah.
It's it's formless, lots of teeth.
Screaming.
Yeah, it's just a dark blob, basically. Like, it's a, yeah. I don't know how to describe it other than that.
It's like made out of blood and smoke. It looks terrifying.
Yeah. Yep. Doll has a, so she's got that medallion still, and she keeps saying,
gosh, I follow your path with strength and courage.
Thank you. Yes.
Doesn't that sound nice? Doesn't that sound so nice?
It sounds so nice.
Yeah. With strength and courage. Yeah. So it's kind of it's almost like the force is with me.
Yeah.
Type of chant, like Chiru Inoue would say, I'm one with the force, force of me. Sort of thing. It gives her kind of like the strength to go in. As they walk in, just like the bigger guy kind of has like a big torch.
Looks like a tiny, not a lightsaber, but it has the same kind of like little V shape with like a emitter kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like when you see like those memes of like someone using like a little lightsaber knife to cut their bread so it toasts. Like that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. And just the swirling of the shadows around it is just so, so cool. Like so awesome. Yeah. Like, it just, you feel it. You're like what you can see it, but you feel it. Like they do such a good job of the atmosphere. Not to mention all the mist and everything. But anyway, so the ghost appears behind her. And this thing's, they had to nail the shriek. Because it's Shrieker's Reach. It is a very scary shriek.
It's so scary.
So good. And yeah, it basically chases everybody. Like the other kids leave, but she stays.
And she stays behind. She believes it's all in her mind.
Right. So she's just chanting like it's in my mind. You know, I follow your path, you give me strength, all that stuff.
Right, like as soon as they entered this place, she separated from them and went further ahead, out of the light.
Yeah. Right. Yes. And into the darkness.
The imagery in this is so, so fascinating, right? Because the rest of the kids leave, and they're like, why aren't you coming with us? And there's like a cave-in or something separates her from everyone else. Now she's in full darkness.
Right.
And we get the reveal that like, oh, this isn't a ghost because they have a red lightsaber and they cut her.
Right.
And it's like, it gets this right shit's on the arm.
Yeah.
This is some Sith hiding out somewhere.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I find that there's a bit right at like the halfway point of the episode, where like, it looks like the top of the cave is like breaking open. Like there's light coming in and there's this imagery of like, you need to like forsake the, like reach for the light. Like that'll get you out of here.
But then like she pulls the rock and it brings them both further down into the dark.
Yeah.
But, they both get down to the bottom and there's still light in the cave now, and she can now see that the ghost is a person. It's like a very like pale, like looks like an old woman, but who knows with these things.
She's only a couple hundred years from becoming Gollum.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what she definitely what she looks like. And she, Doll is able to pick up the lightsaber. And the old woman is like force pulling the lightsaber, and they have this awesome like tug of war of the lightsaber where she's pulling it and she's having it like force pulled out of her hand.
Yeah.
But she's able to keep holding it and ignites it. And you assume she just straight up murders.
Yeah. Yep. And like we'll talk about it when we talk about what happens next. Because it sets her on this path. Like, it's so easy the whole time to think this medallion she's clutching to, this, like, she can use the force, she's reaching for the light, like, she's on the path to be a Jedi, right. And that is absolutely not what is happening.
But there's all this little stuff in the episode even leading up to, like, this twist.
Yeah.
Where, like, in the beginning, she says, I'm getting out of here. She's going to leave on her own.
Yep.
And then as soon as they get to Screecher's Reach, the dude, he ignites his little light, his light source, and she leaves it and goes into the dark to leave them behind.
Yep.
And then she separates herself from them again in this cave-in and says, I'll be right there. And then when she's reaching towards the light, what does she do? She pulls a rock. She commits an act of violence, and they both descend back into the darkness.
Yeah.
There's all this stuff visually and, like, a little bit in the dialogue to just kind of, like, show you what's actually happening in retrospect. And it's really, really cool.
It's so fascinating because her descent isn't one that we've seen for dark side characters before. This isn't an act of, like, she's overcoming her fear, right? She's not succumbing to it. She's not getting angry. It's about escape. It's about,
but it's,
like,
at
feeling powerful
alone
and courageous.
It's at an escape for herself and not a desire to make the situation better for the others. That's the thing.
It's so selfish.
And I think if we saw more, like, realistic Star Wars stories, this is where you would get a lot of Sith dark side users, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's people in desperate situations.
I find it so compelling.
It's desperate situations that,
make a selfish choice for their own freedom.
Any means necessary. I got to get out of this.
I don't see her as a villain, right?
No.
Like, she's not a bad person because she's following the dark side.
No, but this is how people fall further, right? Like, this, they make the selfish choice instead of the one to help others around them. They make the choice to get themselves out of it and not make sure anyone can follow them. That's how people get worse.
Right. Yeah.
Because then they keep making the selfish choice, right? Like, that's the thing.
Right. And sometimes I mean, for her and for the other kids, as I was saying before, you know, it's the non-selfish choice is not necessarily an easy one or one that looks like it has a good outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
what is she going to gain by staying here?
And probably die.
And what?
I mean, Baithen,
like, there's
Baithen kind of tells us what she gains by staying here. She still has a community. She's got people around her that care about her. Like, even in this horrible place, they still are friends. They still find little ways to have fun. They still have a community together.
Even her final line isn't one of, like, malice. It's don't look back, right?
Right,
right.
And, like, I don't begrudge her this choice. I just, it's so compelling.
Yeah.
It's something I found, like, I didn't see the episode going that way the first time I watched it.
Right. No, I didn't either.
And
it's such a downer.
And then you go back and you're like, oh, it's right here the whole time.
Yeah, it is.
It's on her face the first time she takes that helmet off. Like,
the first thing she says in the episode is, I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
I'm getting out of here. Not we are getting out of here. She's not interested in the others following her.
She's not even offering to take them.
No.
They insist.
Right. She doesn't even offer. She doesn't say thank you. She doesn't say, okay, fine, let's go. It's just, they just do it. And she lets them. Even though her plan the whole time is to leave them behind. Like, which is part of what, like,
she does ask. She does ask when this Sith person shows up to take her.
Right.
Like, can they come? And she says no. And that's when she's like, well, sorry, fuck it. Like, I'm going.
But she wasn't planning on bringing them in the first place. So, like, is her asking that question?
No, it was just a matter of, like,
so you have
they're here.
You have to ask, like,
I feel bad.
She kind of knew she knew the answer to that question already. Like, she asked it.
I think she needed them to hear it.
Yeah.
And not from her.
Right. Which is still, again, like, her kind of making a shitty choice. Like, it's kind of her doing a shitty thing. Which which makes this whole
episode. She didn't tell them she had a way out. She just told them,
I'm leaving.
Like, we're going to the mountain, I guess?
Right.
This sounds like an adventure for a few days, not like you're actually for real leaving.
Right.
Yeah, honestly, my first initial thought when it was first happening is, like, man, I hope Skeleton Crew is kind of like this. Because I was like, yeah, it'd be kind of neat. Like, before I saw it go, like, all the dark things. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is just a little adventure with a bunch of kids. Like, that's kind of cool.
Nope.
We'll see how. Yep. Skeleton Crew goes. But, so she, as she's out there, she escapes. She meets up with her friends, and the medallion talks to her. And is like, now it's time for us to meet.
Yeah.
That voice is so creepy.
It's so creepy.
No, I don't, actually.
It's Angelica Houston.
What?
Really?
That's wow. what it says.
Wow.
Wow.
That's sweet.
Yep. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
It's got a real, motherly quality to it, but in a way that I do not want.
They call her Sith Mother in the credits.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. So she shows up and basically is like, you made a good, you did a good job. Now it's time to continue your training, basically. And is like, you still need to make this choice. Are you going to sacrifice? You're going to basically give up all your friends and come with me or stay here?
Right.
Yeah.
Which honestly feels like a Jedi, would make them make that exact same choice. But
yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Weird. Weird how related these two weird force factions are.
Yeah. I'll bet you. I wonder if there's another episode that might talk about how related those two are, but maybe we'll get to that later in this episode. But she makes the choice. She's staying with her Sith mommy, and they leave.
You know, one of the things I get just from the look of this Sith is the owl from Avatar: The Last Airbender.
100%. I also was looking at her she looks like an owl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things in this episode, one of the lines that is said when she shows up in her weird ship that I think is really interesting and I think also sounds like kind of twisting like a Jedi precept is when Dahl says, I thought the test was supposed to be in my mind. And she says, well, all tests are really in your mind. Like that sounds like a Jedi thing to me.
Yeah. The test wasn't. Do you think it's a success because she cut this Sith down?
Yeah, 100%. Because she made the choice to take a...
She made the choice to kill.
To take a life to save her own. And that's that's a big thing. Pretty much all...
That's how I read
Pretty much all the falls that we have any details about have something like that. Like, taking a life to save your own, selfishly, in a way that you didn't have to do is, a big part of the fall.
Right.
Anakin killing the younglings.
Even before that, the
Tusken Raiders is a big part of it.
The novelization of Revenge of the Sith, the end of Dooku is such powerful writing.
Yeah. Right. He absolutely didn't need to kill Dooku. That did not have to happen.
No, not at all. And they do a really good job. The book stays in Dooku's POV a little bit and is he recognizes that right now, this is the only thing he's ever been here for, is to be Anakin's first cold-blooded murder.
Right. Even though that's not true. His first cold-blooded murder was a whole
bunch. I don't think it's true either. I think it's just Palpatine taking advantage, but...
Snip. I think it's really interesting to think about Dooku in his relationship to the rest of the Jedi, down through.
He doesn't have Sith eyes.
He doesn't.
Oh, we are...
Dooku taught Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon taught Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan taught Anakin.
We're big Dooku fans over here.
We are.
On the podcast.
I like Dooku a lot.
Dooku is so underserved by so much of the material he appears in because so much of him is so much more interesting than the material that he actually gets.
Did we Jedi Lost at the end? Come down on positive on that? We should read Jedi Lost. Dooku Jedi Lost is really good.
It's an audio drama. And it's really good. And it's basically all about his life, basically. And then all of his stuff in, what was that?
Tales of the Jedi.
Tales of the Jedi was fantastic.
Yeah.
I need to watch that.
And that still works.
Yeah, that's really good. I highly recommend that. Just for him and Ahsoka. They're both well-fleshed in that little mini-series.
So I think those two, if you're a Jedi fan, those two. And we've covered both on the podcast. So.
Yeah.
I think that, to talk about Ahsoka again briefly, I think Baylan is pretty close to what Dooku kind of always should have been.
I'm so sad that Ray Stevenson passed before we could get the conclusion of Baylan's story.
Yeah. I'm not against recasting him at all, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, yeah, same.
Me neither,
I would love...
but I'm just bummed.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Watching Ahsoka kind of makes me want to go back and rewatch Rome, which I haven't seen in forever.
Ooh.
Because of Ray Stevenson. He's one of the main characters in that.
Yeah, he's... I love him and Kevin McKidd.
Ooh. Yeah. If it's okay with y'all, I really need to run to the restroom before we do the last episode.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Gary has a rule that if he's gone, we're not allowed to speak because he doesn't want to know.
Just make it easier editing.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to miss any conversations, so when I leave.
Yeah. I watched I saw a thing on Instagram or Facebook the other day about Dooku and his conversation with Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones, and just like, can't you imagine all of these lines coming from Qui-Gon Jinn? And I'm just like, yeah, you know, I kind of can.
It can't. Yeah. It would have been interesting to have Qui-Gon. I just love that scene so much. It's my favorite scene in that movie.
I think Attack of the Clones is the worst Star Wars movies by a mile.
I agree.
Like, because Christopher Lee is so good and Ewan McGregor's so good.
He's so good.
Like, how could they not have a good scene together?
The scene's great, and it serves a bigger plot point. The Sith are so in the Jedi right now that I can literally stand here and tell you everything about the plot that's happening, and you're not going to believe me.
Right, which is incredible. It's so fun.
Yeah, it's so good. Not an Attack of the Clones fan, but that scene is... I mean, to be fair, I am a fan of just about everything Obi-Wan does in that movie.
Because Ewan McGregor is a delight. But,
just a goddamn delight.
Everything else around Ewan McGregor in that movie is just kind of a train wreck.
Except for Dexter Jetster.
Yes, Dexter Jetster.
I love that man to pieces.
He's great.
Give me a sitcom just about him running the kitchen there.
I would love that. I think he's got a story.
Yeah.
Like the bear, but it's Dexter
Jetster. Oh my God. I would watch the fuck out of Dexter Jester's The Bear. Amazing. Incredible. He's got a story in the Return of the Jedi, certain point of view. And I'm afraid to read it because I think it's going to be sad.
Probably. A lot of Star Wars is actually sad.
Yep.
Star Wars is so sad. Someone asked me recently if Star Wars ever had happy endings, and I'm like, not usually, because the stories never end.
Just in the movies, and then something else happens.
Yeah, that's the thing. Something else is always going to happen, so there is no end.
It's all about when you stop, right?
Yeah, 100%.
That's how life works, too, right?
But, it never ends. Doesn't that just kind of, fit the whole theme of, balance and, the push and pull with light and dark anyway? It never ends.
Yeah.
It's always going to go back and forth.
I always think of, someone described... Game of Thrones, this is super off topic, but Game of Thrones as a sequel to the storybook ending of a story. It's what happened after the started a rebellion and then became king and all that stuff. And
right, you gotta keep it together.
Yeah. I found an interview with the CEO of Cartoon Saloon, who made Screech's Reach, and he's also the director of this, Paul Young, who apparently grew up in Ireland, and so that's why it's got so much Banshee influence. Well,
this is the studio that made Secret of Kells too, right?
Yes, it is. They did Secret of Kells. They did Song of the Sea. They worked on all that. He definitely confirmed. He's like, yeah, we wanted it to be like the Empire Strikes Back cave scene. But he also was just like, it's just kind of like a, it also is kind of about like me and my friends just kind of wandering around the Irish countryside as
That's
kids.
Cool.
Like when I was 16.
That's so cool.
Imagine the Fae coming out to get us.
He mentions the secret that she has, the medallion.
Yeah.
He's like, it was kind of like me when I was that age. A lot of my friends were staying in hometown and redoing school and stuff, but I had been accepted into college and was going to leave and go to college, and I didn't tell any of them. I just stayed pretended that it was that until was just going to leave. He's like, I felt like I needed to keep it a secret. He didn't want to gloat
That's
about
tough.
It. And I'm like, that's kind of neat. I like that, that kind of allegory for him.
Right, what would happen if she did tell them? She's going to cause some kind of big ruckus at the camp, right? Other people find out she's leaving, it could put her ability to leave in jeopardy.
What benefit does it serve her?
There's a lot about this story. There's a lot about this story that I think is really interesting as a look at the fall of someone.
But just a really neat neat story. It's like 15 minutes and they've packed so much in there.
Yeah, it's one of the shorter ones of the season two. Mm-hmm. Spy Dancer was the longest one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's Screecher's Reach.
Very, very Halloween really season like appropriate.
Yeah, definitely.
This who may knows not when come this out is before airing. This is not gonna come out before Halloween, but yeah. No. Spoilers.
Was recorded before Halloween.
That's
true. Very funny.
It's recording. We're recording this live as you're listening to it, listener.
Uh-huh. It's incredible.
Directly to you. Yeah.
Directly to you.
The power of modern technology. The subspace transmissions. We can do it in real time.
Yeah. Gary, you want to start us off with the Sith? Or just Sith. Just called Sith.
Sith. It's just called Sith. It's the first episode of the season. And I mentioned earlier, I think the art in this episode in particular is just gorgeous.
Which like, it better be, because it's literally about art, basically.
Yeah, it's about art. She is a painter, right? And, like, I think it's weird to say it this way, but I'm thinking about it, like, I'm always a big fan of work in a medium that is, like, almost self-referential in a little way. Like, I really like Patrick Rothfuss's Name of the Wind, and the protagonist of that is a storyteller telling a story. And so you have to take it with a grain of salt because you're seeing it through the perspective of a storyteller.
I've been meaning to read that forever.
It has like a meta element on that book. I read about half of it and could not stand the.
I also don't think we're ever going to get a resolution to that. Also, similar, but not Rothfuss. R.R. Vierty's recent book, The First Binding, also does this, and I think does it maybe a little better. Hmm. And that's the same thing where like, it's a unreliable narrator who is a storyteller by trade telling his story to a rapt audience. And how much of it can you trust is like actually true. Whereas this like visually is a painterly style because the character is a painter. And sometimes you get the world in her perspective, which is way more painterly and like thin lines than you get when you have her traveling across the desert per se.
Yeah,
there's a bit near the end in her fight where the whole background changes and the Sith that she's fighting is like, oh, is this the world you see? Like, this one is so much, I think, like, you know, I always am the one who's going to pick the thing that has the weird force, like, stuff going on. She is a former Sith who's walked away from the Order, but is still struggling with the darkness inside of her, right?
Right.
We see her wake up. Yeah. She has this dream. She wakes up, and the background behind her bed is all black and splotchy.
Yeah, I like the use of negative space. Later. I love the use of white in this episode.
It's so good. I like it a lot. And then we get this bit where she's like trying to work on a painting later. And she puts her hand against the wall as she's doing these really beautiful brush strokes. She pulls her hand away and it's blackened and it is spreading from where her handprint was. And she mentions then like, oh, the darkness wants to be part of the painting.
Right.
And it is a reflection of like where she's at. Like it's, she is, my read on this is that she is dealing with this sort of like depression, this like inability to let go of the darkness inside her, right. Whether that be her fear or her anxiety or
past actions,
her emotional state.
We don't know what she's done.
Her past actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She, the darkness for her is her trauma that she is trying to move away from. Even when you see the painting that she's doing, there's a moment where it pulls back and you see the eyes of the master.
Yeah.
That is coming for her. I just think this episode's gorgeous. I love her droid.
Yeah. Yeah. E2 is really cute.
E2. Yeah. Does he have a full number?
I don't know.
I was looking for that. It is
a little three-legged droid with the one eye. It's just cute.
Yeah, he's a little droid with one eye. He's kind of like a little spider guy.
Yeah.
It's just E2 is just its full name.
If he had betrayed her, it would have been a very like Brutus moment. E2 Brute.
He kind of looks like
bad joke. Thank you for laughing.
No, that's an excellent joke. I don't know what you're talking about.
I heard it. I will acknowledge.
Thank you.
E2 Brute. it kind of looks like the spider droids from Zelda, the little, like, the spider guardians. Yeah. That's what he kind of looks like.
He's kind of round. I like how round and, like, spindly he is.
Yeah.
I love her
go ahead.
Shuttle, and I love the way he fits into it.
Oh, yeah, at the end when they're flying away.
Her little bike.
And the bike,
she's
too.
Got, like, a... She is, like a General Grievous bike.
Yeah, it's cool.
The big wheel.
I like the big model
wheel. I love
wheel.
The big wheel. Yeah. I'm always a fan of the big wheel.
It came back. Yeah. It was a TSMEU-6 personal wheel bike.
Oh, it's so cool.
I guess it is a personal bike. I don't know if you could fit anyone else on there, but...
Not probably.
It just looks sweet rolling across, like, this desert landscape.
Yeah.
I do, like, even though, like, I get, like she leans out and it turns and stuff, I do question just how well you could actually maneuver a big wheel like that.
I don't know.
But then again, like, unicycles or whatever, like, people can be real good on those.
It's weird, because the thing is, like, she gets out of it and it stands upright by itself, right. No problem. There's no kickstand. This isn't a bicycle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just think the interesting thing about this is I think we've talked a lot about how the Force works on this channel or on this podcast a lot. And I love the thought of that every Force user kind of sees it a different way.
Yeah.
And her seeing it as a painting really works and surprisingly has not been, I don't think it's been done before.
And I think, not to...
Avar Chris sees it as a song.
And it's interesting that you bring Avar up in this moment, because I was going to say, this season is bookended by someone who sees it as a painting and then someone else who sees it as a song. Because the final episode, Al's song, is about, like, finding resonance in the Force through vocalization.
Yeah, it's about a little girl who finds power in the Force by the way she resonates with kyber crystals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. Like, I do like that, you know, in the way that Norman mentioned earlier, that it has something to do with, like, it relates to, like, Spider-Verse in this way, is that, like, when you get more fully in her POV, even the art style behind her changes. I think that that's really cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of really cool stuff visually in this. Like, when she's going through the hallway and it's really dark and then, like, it pans down from, like, the eyes watching her, or in the room with the lily pads that we see from her perspective, he's in the distance.
Yeah.
And then he, like, disappears.
There's a bit early on when she's, like, walking up the stairs and the staircase is turning black behind her.
Yeah. The use of black and white, even within all the other color in this episode, is, like, really interesting. Yeah. Just looks really cool. The shots across the desert are gorgeous. I also think that the look of this woman, she really kind of looks to me like a younger Claudia Black, like Farscape area Claudia Black. That's like what I see.
I kind of see that. As I was watching this episode, I was kind of thinking about how the light and dark part of the Force has changed, like the way we talk about it in Star Wars narrative has changed, I think, as we have, as a culture, have, like, understood ourselves, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think...
I mean, storytelling is always kind of a reflection of the time the creator, storyteller...
No, I agree with that 100%. I'm just saying Star Wars has been around long enough for us to watch it change like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a same, like one franchise has, you know, been around long enough that we've kind of seen it evolve. Whereas... You know, when the original trilogy came out, it was very much like light good, darkness bad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get the prequels and it's like, maybe the guys on the light can be fooled and, you know, a little bit corrupted by the darkness, you know, like that kind of thing. And now we're kind of getting to the point where, you know, everyone's kind of been to therapy and, you know, everyone's kind of like, yo, it's about using that part of us that we feel like is like the darkness and being okay with it. And that's kind of what this, you know, episode's about.
Right. Yeah. And I think what's cool about Star Wars and the way that like a lot of these smaller modern Star Wars stories are being told is that there's kind of room for both approaches, right? Like sometimes a story is really served by like a more simple, like black and white narrative. And sometimes we kind of want to explore what it means for there to be kind of this cosmic Force that is somewhat sentient but has some say in our path in life, like what's good, what's bad. We talk about
the will of the force, like a lot in Star Wars.
Right.
Like, yeah. And I think I was going to say, we talked about it on our Mortis episodes a lot.
Yeah.
About it. And kind of how the will of the force, I'm not sure it's sentient. It's more like a river. Like a river wants to move in a direction.
Yeah.
And right. It can be moved. You can make a dam, and that's the dark side, like building something artificial. And then, like, to bend the will of the river to what you want it to do. Or you can live with the river and move in its direction. And that's kind of the balance that it wants to do.
Yeah. You know? So, like, I play D&D, and I think a lot of how I think about the Force is, and how I think about, like, alignments in D&D are, like, really cross-pollinated in my thought process. So, like, there are things about the Force that make me think that it does have some kind of actual sentience, even without like the Mortis gods. Like the simple fact that like Anakin exists points to there being some kind of will, some kind of actual sentience to the Force, which just really forces you to put a whole bunch of stuff in a different context.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's okay.
I think at a certain point, it does come down to not only like the will of the force, but like the read of the person who can wield it. Right. Like I constantly think about, there's a quote from Claudia Gray's Master and Apprentice, where Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, are having a conversation, and Obi-Wan is like distraught because he's saying like, if the darkness is just as strong as the light, it doesn't matter what we do, because in the end, hey, it's a tie. And Qui-Gon's like, no, it matters which side we choose. Even if there will never be more light than darkness, even if there can be no more joy in the galaxy than there is pain, for every action we undertake, for every word we speak, for every life we touch, it matters. I don't turn toward the light because it means someday I'll win some sort of cosmic game. I turn toward it because it is the light.
Yeah.
And it is this constant choice of like, even if there is no end, even if there's always going to be conflict and strife, like all I can do is the best I can do.
Yeah.
And try to move the needle even just a little bit.
Right. And Qui-Gon's a guy that has some impulses that are kind of dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's such an interesting reflection in what we see with the Sith in this short, as we get deeper and she faces her former master, right? Like this Sith shows up for her and we get this great chase sequence in the desert that it ultimately ends in a duel between the two of them. And she reveals her lightsaber and it's yellow and they have this great fight, but she's just a little overpowered and he's pushing her and she's getting angry and he basically challenges her and is like, no, if you strike me down, you will be the Sith master. This is definitely at post rule of two, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
And, she's balanced, right? She reveals the other blade, the second blade in her dual bladed lightsaber. One end is yellow and the other is red. And she has found this sort of intermediary, like the darkness wants to be part of the painting. Like,
right. Yeah.
And, because the painting is her.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Which is,
and
I mean, yeah.
Again, like, I think what you were saying earlier, Tim, about like the way that we view the force and light side and dark and like this era where we've gone to therapy, like,
right.
You know, it changes the shape. It changes the shape of it. And right. I hope that that is something that we get to see come to more of the live action stuff and more of the things that, like, I would like the light side and the dark to be maybe even more nebulous than it has been in the films up to this point, right? Anakin falls and he is suddenly the most evil person in all of the galaxy next to Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not entirely who Anakin is. We've gotten to see through the cracks of Anakin. We just talked about Vader last time. That VR game shows that he still is vying for Padme. And, like, it still comes from a tragic place.
Right.
Right.
I think it's easy to forget that when you look at, like, Darth Vader, the imposing guy who cuts down the rebels at the end of Rogue One. Like.
Right.
Or breaks a child's neck when he shows up in Obi-Wan. Like,
right. Man, like.
I don't know. I find this so compelling.
I do too. No, yeah, I think it's really interesting. One of the things I think is interesting about the saber design in this is that both sabers look more like Western swords than like a lightsaber. Like the shape of the hilts, and then the blades are kind of thin and actually blade-like and not round. And they come to points.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. I guess her master shows up. Very cool looking. His design's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's spooky.
He's got more like Inquisitor vibes than like a Sith definitely. Master, typically.
Yeah. But also, again, in now that I'm thinking about it and looking at this, they both have cybernetics, right? He's got like this weird face mask thing going on, and she has like a robotic arm, and like there's something that Star Wars is constantly doing also with the dark side of like the dehumanization of the user.
Yeah, right. It's a cyberpunk thing, right? Like, yeah, that's part of cyberpunk is like, what does it mean to be human as you replace yourself?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's where we see, you know, we see at the very beginning when she's trying to like, she levitates the orbs of water out of her cup and like changes them to paint using that hand, the cybernetic hand, the robot hand, and then it all turns black.
That's the other thing too, is like in the live action, we don't ever really see a whole lot of like transformative force powers, but animation and like written media is a lot more willing to kind of play with that. With the force.
Yeah. The thing that's great, we've talked about like the force as an entity, like learning and growing, but people being able to do things that no one could do before. And then further down, you get more people who can like embrace those powers kind of deal.
Right.
The force can all like, we will always get new force powers. Like
you have to.
I think people will be mad about it every time it happens for the rest of time.
Agreed.
But like,
I will be that person.
But also, like, because of the nature of the force as has been established, like, it is this all powerful, all encompassing. Like, you can constantly do new things with it and just be like, yeah, we could run real fast sometimes. Look at how we jump.
Right.
If you look at like Phantom Menace,
like the running real fast and the jumping real far stuff, that just feels like a natural extension of force push and pull to me.
Well, and now we get, like, you can heal people with the Force.
Right.
Which I'm also fine with.
That also makes sense.
You can telecommute now.
Summon a sword out of nothing.
You can telecommute your body.
Yeah.
Well, like, Force teleportation, like, being able to transfer people and objects with the Force is something from, like, some older EU material. Like, play around. Yeah,
no, I mean, I don't like the EU stuff either, so that I'll stay consistent on that.
Yeah.
That said, I do love Last Jedi so much, but.
Me too.
Anyway.
Me too. Last Jedi is my favorite Star Wars movie, and some people are like, what? Really? And I'm like, yeah, I love that movie. Like, I will accept some criticisms of that film, but it just does so much stuff that I love.
Oh, yeah, I have plenty of criticisms of it, but I.
We talked for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, I remember that. It was fun.
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible movie.
So good.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think the force is a really fascinating thing to talk about because like you said earlier, every Jedi and Sith kind of sees the force differently. And I think that's also true of like pretty much every Star Wars fan. Like we all kind of have different thoughts of what the force is and what the force does. Like I think it makes sense that there is some kind of sentience to the force because I just think there's too many weird things if it is purely just a flowing energy.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think about it. There's so many. God, I think there's even episodes of this. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about The Journey to Darkhead. Is that what that one's called?
Yeah. No, yeah. The Journey to Darkhead.
But there's the bit at the beginning where, not the beginning, but like when the pilot is talking to the Jedi Council. And one of the members of the Jedi Council is like, this is the Jedi who's going to go with you. I can sense that it's part of his destiny.
Right.
And it's just like this sort of trust and willingness to go with like, the Force is telling me this thing and I'm going to trust in it and let it happen. See how it plays out. And at least in this circumstance, it turns out for the better for that character. Right. Like even if. The pilot at the end of the day feels like they didn't accomplish their mission. It helped the Jedi. And he thanks her for like, I needed this.
Right.
in a way that is trusting some sort of otherworldly.
Right. There's like, there's a higher power to it. Like there's something going on.
But like, it's weird because like, I think I do agree with Tim. It's weird to call it like sentience or omniscience. Like, I don't think it's like a deity.
Right. I mean, right? Like, so much of the Force is like Eastern spiritualism. It's like Buddhism, yeah. A lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know that I don't think we're ever, I hope we never get concrete answers. Like, that's the thing. Right. Like, I think.
No, yeah, I agree.
The Force staying in this space where we can have these conversations is way more interesting than being like, nope, here's Force God.
Right.
He made all the choices and wove the tapestry.
It's just the will of tiny bacteria that live on all life. It's fine. They're all psychically connected and make decisions.
I love the idea of midichlorians being actually the reason.
No, we go deeper. It's the wills.
Oh,
when there was a whole thing a long time ago about like, oh, they're going to do a movie about the wills, like Osmosis Jones.
Right. Right, right. No, just imagine that all the midichlorians are sentient, and they are, every single midichlorian is psychically connected to
each other. It's a hive
mind. Each other one. It's just one
the
giant.
The Force is a hive
just
mind.
One giant hive mind of bacteria.
Yikes.
That's how it can make perfect decisions and also deceive or like guide, because it can see all of the galaxy all at once. Because all of the bacteria is connected.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I love
Star
it.
Star Wars is weird.
Give me weird stuff.
I love the weird stuff, though.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, we need to do an episode that's just the Force episode, where we all just talk about how we feel like the Force is.
Yeah.
That would be a good bantha. I'd be down for that. Get a little round table going.
That'd be fun.
Oh, man.
To
get like 10 people arguing, talking over each other. That sounds like a perfect podcast.
That's a nightmare day, I love that. Actually. Yeah. Never mind.
I love that silly rant of Freddie Prinze Jr.'s that like makes the rounds on like social media every now and then.
Oh, yeah.
That's so funny to me. To like cycle back to something you said during Screecher's Reach, now that we're just kind of like talking about all this other stuff, I really like the way Screecher's Reach plays against the end of the Bandits of Galak.
Ooh.
Because the end of Bandits of Galak is us seeing like this brother doing everything he can.
Letting her go.
To let his sister go to a better life. So it is very much like the opposite of Screecher's Reach.
It's
this person making a selfless choice for the better of someone else rather than making a selfish choice for the better of themselves. Yeah, it is. Right. It's really cool. I really like the look of Bandits of Galak a lot. That probably would have been that might have been my second choice, like, the more I thought about all of this.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Sorry, just stay on Bandits for a second, but the reveal of the old woman as the Jedi.
Yeah, it's perfect.
It's so good.
It's so perfect.
It's so good. And it's an Inquisitor, which, again, that's another episode that is like, okay, this is when it takes place.
Right.
It takes place during the rise of the Empire, before Battle of Yavin. Because as far as I'm aware, I guess other than the one that pops up in Ahsoka that I don't think counts, the Inquisitors are pretty much done their mission by the time Luke shows up.
Mm.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. More or less. But yeah, Sith. I mean, there's not much plot wise, I guess, to talk about other than she learns to embrace that darkness in herself.
Yeah.
And fight and defeat her master. And then run away.
And then get the hell out of Dodge. Yeah. Find her own path.
It's over.
But, she's the master now.
The meat
of herself.
This episode is really about what is the darkness. And I do like the mention of, she very much mentions, oh yeah, the eclipse is today, which is darkness over, you know, blocking out
over
the light. Which I did actually think, I was thinking like practically like, are eclipses a big thing in space? Like, you're always kind of like, I don't know, it's just a object moving in front of a star, like, and I feel like that must happen all the time. But maybe
you just have to think, though, like virtually any culture prior to becoming spacefaring probably put significance on eclipses. So why wouldn't that have like stayed with them in some way?
Well, and I think even if you're someone who's traveling the galaxy, I bet you still don't encounter eclipse days that often.
Yeah. Right. Like when you're on a planet. No, but like when you're flying around, you'll just happen upon like seeing them in the distance and stuff.
Just by being in orbit, you're going to be you're going to see an eclipse of some sort. Like,
right.
Sure. From,
yeah.
But it's not the same as like being on planet and seeing it happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But being where it is when.
Yeah.
It has that. I think it packs more of a punch.
Yeah.
When it just happens to be where I am on right. this given day.
Because when you're in space, yeah. an eclipse isn't really going to darken your vision a whole lot because there's just so much yeah. other like stuff around. But when yeah. you're on planet, yeah. like it gets dark.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I missed the eclipse like a week or two ago.
We could just barely see it from where I was.
Yeah. yeah. Just you didn't go outside and stare at the sun?
I woke up at 11:30 and realized it was 2 hours prior.
There you go.
So yeah.
That's what happened for me.
So that's gonna wrap up our coverage of these three episodes of Visions.
Yeah.
All excellent. Like I said before.
Please go watch this season. Like yeah. it's worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
It's nine shorts. It comes out to maybe an hour and a half, a little longer than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all between 15 and 20 minutes. There's nine of them.
It's two yeah. hours, 3 hours tops. I don't think it's even 3 hours. I think it's yeah. under that.
Yeah. You can watch them all like a movie. That's
yeah,
very quick.
That's how I did.
But yeah, Norman, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Super fun.
I'm always happy to talk about weird Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
Love that for you.
That's my favorite type of Star Wars stuff, honestly. The weirder,
that's
the better.
That's why we do that.
Yeah, I was just actually randomly talking to my boss because we're talking about my company gets heavily into Halloween. Spoilers, once again, this is very much before Halloween.
Yeah.
But she's talking about all this stuff that she's trying to dress up on and all these creatures and stuff. And I was just like, yeah, this is why I like Star Wars, is there's so many weird, creatures that you can find in Star Wars. Just give me them.
I like all the weird people. Like, I'm interested in all the just kind of like strange alien people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, to expand on the weird creatures, I want them to be like weird creatures that have a weird culture because of like their.
Yeah.
Like, I think I shared on the Discord and on Twitter as well. There's a Twitter account that's just shares concept art. And one of the concept arts was this oracle. And she looked like a weird spider thing with sunken out eyes. And she had like millions of bugs in her eyes that were like a hive mind that she could send out and would report back to her. And then she could tell you. And that's how, like, she got all her knowledge, and it was cut from the sequels. And I'm like, we could have had this really awesome creature that would have been horrifying to look at, but please,
yeah.
I would have loved that.
That would have been sick.
But
would have been so good.
So, yeah, spooky shit. Give me that stuff.
Give me that instead of Palpatine coming back for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Somehow he returned. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I shared in our chat just before we wrap, mm-hmm. I love the final, the reveal of the painting, the completed painting at the end of this episode. She's finally able to finish it.
Yeah.
Oh, and it is her hand, the robotic hand holding the lightsaber against the sun as the backdrop, and both the yellow and red blades are ignited because she has embraced both sides.
You know what's interesting about that? And I don't know if this is just like a weird production order thing. The side that the blades is on is reversed from what it actually is on her lightsaber.
Interesting. I mean,
because the yellow comes out of the side that's like closer to the guard when she actually uses it in the fight, and the red comes out of the bottom.
That's interesting.
So they're reversed in this painting.
I was going to ask if you think that it's just
that
she
started
like,
painting it and was like, "Oh crap, I got it mixed up," and then was like, "I got too far."
It's fine. It's fine. We're just gonna finish.
No one's gonna notice. No one's gonna yeah.
except for Norman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just know because like I just think the way that her hilt works is really, really cool. So I'm just like, oh, that's weird. That's backwards.
That's cool.
And I wonder if
I didn't think about the side because the emitters are different,
right?
And I didn't really think about that.
So I wonder if like it's probably just a production order thing, and like they made a decision about like the shape of her hilt and everything, and then someone made this painting. But like in the context of the episode, like the red now being on the top could just be like more of her accepting that this is a part of her.
Yeah.
And the yellow is kind of her running away a little bit.
I find that fascinating.
A little bit. I see that. But she's, I mean, she made the right choice. I think I made a joke about her running away, but I mean, she definitely needs to get the heck out of there.
Right. But like, she didn't confront her past. Yeah. She ran away from her past, which is like the whole point of this episode.
Well, she cuts down this master at the end.
Right. But like previously, like to get here.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. She is now confronted and dealt and is moving on with her life. She leaves this painting. She even leaves this painting behind.
Right. Like this, we don't really get a good sense of like what this space is. Now we're just talking about the episode after after Tim did his outro. But like this space kind of gives the vibe like maybe it's a temple that she found.
Yeah.
Because like it is this spire in a desert. And then like she's just parked underneath it. And then she leaves.
Fascinating.
So like we get the sense that she's this woman, this Sith that's like seeking some kind of inner peace. Maybe she found a Jedi temple.
You know. We talked about the first episode this time and last time. And last time we also talked about a Sith that was on a journey of redemption by cutting down other Sith.
Right.
I went on to read the book Ronin by Emma Mieko Candon.
Mm-hmm.
And it like fills out so much of like what's going on with his character and like where he's at in his life. And I highly recommend that for anyone who hasn't picked it up, but I find it really interesting that both seasons start with a Sith on the run from their past.
Yeah. One of the things I like about this season compared to the last one, too, is that the previous season ended on a real downer note of an episode.
Yeah.
And this one ends on a really hopeful one, whereas this season kind of opens with the less hopeful episodes and the previous one opened with more hopeful ones.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, I wonder how they decide the structure of the season.
Yeah, like what like, order they're going
to
put episodes
in. What order each one's going to be in. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting to think about.
I love the show. Visions is such a cool concept. I wish we had other places where we were exploring non-canon Star Wars, where people could just like go ham with the stories they want to tell.
I would not worry
about conflicting.
I kind of wonder what the next like hook of a season 3 of Visions would be. And I almost wonder if the third one will actually be like all American studios.
Oh, I don't know.
Mm.
Because it would be interesting to like to see that also, like after seeing like all these Japanese studios, all these international studios, like what would a bunch of American cartoon studios do? What does a Nickelodeon produced Star Wars short look like?
Oh my gosh.
Last Airbender.
Yeah, I don't know.
Last Airbender, yeah.
No idea. Yeah. I guess.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, what is something that would have been produced for, like, Cartoon Network that's, like, a Star Wars short? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, I would like... Give Rebecca Sugar a Star Wars short.
Right, yes.
I would like, South American, like, you know, do we have any, like, Argentinian or, you know, like, that kind of... That would be
Neat.
They must exist. I wonder how Disney and, like, Lucasfilm reached out to these studios, like, how these decisions were made.
I would love to know more about the production.
Yeah, there's also like more anime studios that I'd love to see do some of these.
Right. Yeah, I feel like I like keeping it international. I like that a lot. I feel like we, you know, especially in the US, we get a lot of, you know, obviously American animation stuff. But, you know, some of the smaller studios from the US would still be cool.
Yeah, because
I agree there.
Because we don't have any like the last like animated Star Wars stuff. Like 2D animation was the
what Jenny would Tartakovsky, Leica do like with Star Wars
Clone Wars. Yeah, what would Leica do with Star Wars? That'd be sweet.
Yeah, what would Leica do?
What would Leica?
I don't know, man. I would love to see it though.
Yeah, like there are a
we
lot
got
of
Aardman this time,
right? Like there are a lot of studios like in the U.S. that it'd be interesting to see them do some stuff with Star Wars that we've never gotten to see because Disney always kept it in house before.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. I'd be down. I think you're right. Like, I think it would be fun to have more American studios represented, especially smaller ones that we don't get a lot of stuff from. But I also, the thing that I loved about this, and I mentioned it, I think, at the beginning or maybe in the pre-recording stuff of like, the thing I loved about, Al's song was that like, I found that one so pretty that I like went and looked up other stuff that Triggerfish had made.
Right.
And like have it like, I am planning on going and watching some of that content because realizing right away that this is also a stop motion thing, but it is completely unlike what Aardman did earlier.
Well, there's three stop motion in this one because the sisters is also stop motion.
You're right. God, that one was in the stars.
Yeah, so three really of these good. Are stop motion.
One third of this is stop motion.
Right.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
And they all have really distinct styles and like ways of moving and color palette. So like, it's really cool to see the diversity in like in the stop motion animation here too.
I love that we got to see such representation.
Yeah.
I hope that by working on something as big as a Star Wars property means that we get to see more stuff out of them in the future.
Yeah. It was cool to see different media, like more mediums explored across the second season of Visions.
Yeah, definitely. Y'all, I love Star Wars. I say that all the time.
But me too. Like, Star Wars is great.
We get through something like this, and it's just like, oh, God, this ruled, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest, not a fan.
Fuck off. Not get us out of here, then, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, not for me. I've seen a few things, and yeah.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Are you...
Yeah.
Next, I know that y'all did
that perfect.
Miyazaki Madness on the Dueling Genre Patreon. What is that going on over a year ago now?
Yeah, still haven't done anything new, like personally for like podcast stuff.
I mean, we haven't done shit in like 6 months, so
But like, if people want to support like other projects that I'm a part of, if you go to Drive Through RPG and search my name, Norman Mitchell, as an author, you'll find RPG books I've worked on.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Love this for you.
Yeah. I'm very excited. I have not Star Wars related, but I have only recently started getting into Dungeons and Dragons like hardcore and like have found that I just love being a dungeon master. I just think that's nice.
I love that for you, Tim. We need to do some tabletop together.
I'd be super down.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it'd be interesting to like at least try to like get together like some kind of RPG one shot with some of the like dueling genre hosts at some point, maybe.
It's something that comes up every once in a while. It'll happen eventually.
But like Pat,
Cass and I have talked about. I've been reading. I have an RPG book called Thirsty Sword Lesbians that I want to bring Cass into play so bad.
Yeah. I've heard really good things about that. I haven't actually looked through the PDF for that myself.
I got it through an itch.io bundle.
Yeah. You know, I might have it too from an itch.io bundle. I bought a charity bundle a few years ago that had a ton of stuff in it.
Every time they do a charity bundle, I'm like, yeah, I'll throw you the $10 because I'm going to get 1,000 things.
Right, and I'll never be able to look at them all, so I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
Between like...
There's some really gorgeous stuff in all of those.
I actually have literally sitting... right next to me on my floor because I was looking through it before we were podcast. I have the DM's guide because I was going through it for something.
Hell yeah.
The 5e.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, yeah.
I'm an old head when it comes to like D&D. Like I've played some 5e and like I've looked through the stuff. Mm-hmm. I own the books, but like my edition will always be 3.5. I play Pathfinder First Edition. I just love the sheer number of options available.
It was a Pathfinder thing that you worked on.
Yeah, like, I do Pathfinder First Edition content mostly.
That's so sick.
Yeah, which is awesome. It's just a lot for my I'm playing mainly with my family.
Yeah,
that's fair. I'm trying to get like my sisters and you know my brother's very much a 3.5er, but he didn't want to. I mean, he dungeon masters some. We're kind of doing alternate things, but I think he's would much rather play a character.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No one wants to be a forever DM. Like,
I'm more than happy to be a forever DM. I think it's awesome. I think storytelling, I think character work, because I do, I started doing improv as well. So, like, there's a lot of, like, options to improv and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think, and in a lot of ways, I think D&D 5e is a really good, like, introduction to DMing and to, like, kind of the more complicated end of RPGs, because... people have this feeling that like D&D 5e is simple, but no edition of D&D is really all that simple. Dungeons and Dragons is like on the complicated half of the spectrum of RPGs.
Well, and that's the thing is like, so for me, I've gone the other direction. I've been playing a lot of like GM-less indie RPG things lately. I've played a lot of Fiasco. I really want to
try Fiasco. Fiasco seems great.
Fiasco's so
the Coen Brothers movie role-playing game. Point.
It's so good. And then I'm currently playing a game called Orbital, which is like a sci-fi space station version of like that same kind of premise. Yeah. It's just you go around the table taking turns narrating scenes and that's people cool. can interrupt and introduce their characters and add complications. And it's a lot of improv in that way because there aren't even any dice. Yeah. Like
I have a copy of Blades in the Dark on my shelf that I really would love to play at some point.
I want to play that so
bad, too. Powered by the Apocalypse is, like, a really versatile, like, little system. Mm-hmm. I have, like, older editions of Vampire, Vampire and Mage and Werewolf and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, Shadowrun 3rd edition. I've got a lot of older stuff.
There's a lot of good stuff out there, for sure. God, we could do a whole thing about... We could go another 20 minutes about
Tamriel. We got to wrap this up. We've talked about the Force.
I've played some Star Wars RPGs. There's some good stuff there, too.
Yeah.
I have definitely looked into that, but I don't... There's an Expanse tabletop RPG I want to...
Yeah, there is. No.
If you want to start with a Star Wars RPG, don't play the Fantasy Flight one. It's, like, super complicated. The previous... Mm-hmm. Like, big one is Saga Edition, and that's much simpler.
That's what I've heard about. I didn't even hear about the Fantasy Flight one. I've heard about the
Saga Edition is really similar to 4th Edition D&D, so it's really made for you to kind of pick up and figure out quickly.
Okay. I think my brother got me an Expanse tabletop RPG like book, and I'm like, I don't know enough Expanse fans to be able to even start.
That's really funny.
One I've been wanting to play is called Going Rogue, which is like a really short, also GM-less, like sort of, it's inspired by Star Wars and has a lot of like the character archetypes you can choose are the rebel and the scoundrel and things like that. But that's another one that is like a more narrative heavy, like take turns role playing scenes kind of deal.
I mean, I'm into that.
Yeah. That's where a lot of my tabletop stuff has been. It's just been like collaborative storytelling more than relying on dice rolls.
I mean, sometimes I'm just down to just role play for 8 hours.
Or Galactic. I think that's the other one.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Anyway, let's wrap this up.
Tim finally do the outro.
We're having too much fun talking. That's the problem.
For sure.
This is supposed to be more
the
work.
The first time Norman and I saw each other in person, we spent 3.5 hours at a diner talking about Last Jedi.
Yeah, because I had seen it literally the previous day.
Yeah.
So that's this episode, this deep dive. Three more episodes of Visions are now entered into the archives. As we were talking, Norman, all three of us can be found on episodes of various things in duelinggenre.com.
Mm-hmm. All over the place.
And come join the Discord. Also, you can find that in the show notes and on duelinggenre.com. Tune in two more weeks where we'll have a Bantha episode and talk about who knows what.
I don't know what news is happening.
We don't even know when this episode's being released. Sometime after one Halloween, but before another Halloween.
Yes.
So it's, that's the...
Between
it's
two Halloweens.
It's both pre and post-Halloween.
Yeah, it's... So once again, thank you, Norman, for joining us.
Anytime.
And remember that if it's not in the archives...
It doesn't exist.